Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Discover hundreds of unforgettable destinations with expert local guides.
Well, best-selling author Melissa Hale loves a bit of escapism, and she brings us with her to New York in her new book. It's called Only in New York, and it's published by HQ. She's an author in demand. She's also written for Hallmark, and Reese Witherspoon produced the movie of her book, Something from Tiffany's. Melissa Hale, good morning to you. It's lovely to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Congrats on all your success. First of all, a bit of background. You're from beautiful Care in Tipperary, is that correct?
Indeed, yes. Home of the gorgeous castle and the Swiss cottage, very popular on the tourist trail.
And your parents are still there?
They are indeed, yes, and my sisters.
Yeah, which is, and then you live in Wicklow, is that right?
I do, I'm in Delgany, yes.
Yeah, which is also beautiful.
Very, very beautiful part of the country.
And were you one of those children when you were growing up in Tip, were you always stuck in a book, always writing stories?
I was always stuck in a book because I was quite shy. I was born with only one shoulder blade, which not a lot of people know. And I found that I couldn't play sports. My parents were a little bit protective of me. So I used to escape into stories quite a lot. And I kind of learned about the world through stories, and it kind of always stayed with me. But in terms of being a writer, it's not something that they kind of really pitched you at school. It's a case of, if you're good at writing, maybe go into journalism or do something like that. But no, it was always stories that I was interested in, not so much the actual act of writing itself.
And being born without one shoulder blade, I'm looking at you, there's nothing obvious, obviously. Yeah. Is it your left or your right?
It's my left.
And has it impacted your life at all?
Not in the slightest. I did have the option back, I think, when I was maybe 12 or 13 to have something inserted. But the surgery was risky, so we decided against it. And but it just means that I can't do things like swimming or, you know, I can't do cartwheels. Not that I'd be tempted to anyway, but... So, yeah, I've kind of forgotten about it at this point. But I always think about that's when I escaped into books because I couldn't join in sports and things like lots of other people were doing. So yeah, it's something that I often forget about, but only when I get a question like that I remember that that's where that originated, that love of books and escaping into books.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So talk to me about getting published. How did that happen? Because lots of people want to be writers, but it doesn't happen for them.
No, and I think looking back, if I had known how difficult it actually was, I think I probably would have been very daunted by it. But as it turned out, I was on a flight on holidays with my husband, and again, big reader, love reading, and I was reading a novel and it just wasn't grabbing me, and I put it down, and you know when you make these silly comments, I can do better myself, you know, complete throwaway comment, and my husband looked at me and says, we'll try it then. See, you know, so he laid down the gauntlet basically, and I was like, "Well, crikey, maybe I'll give it a go and see what happened." So we did started this story about an Irish woman who's, you know, love of her life coming back into her life at precisely the wrong moment. Yeah. And I sent it to Poole Beg, who, as we know, launched a lot of you know, the best Irish women authors. Sent it to them, and they picked it up. And it went on to sell really well. And so that was the start of the journey.
Isn't that amazing? Well done to your husband, Kevin, as well, though, for throwing down
I actually don't think he did think that I would do it. It was one of those sort of, I was just being contrarian. Okay, then I'll give it a go. Yeah. But I'm glad I did too.
But it was amazing then that you did get accepted, because a lot of the time I interview writers and they get rejection after rejection after rejection. So you had a very quick and happy start.
I was very, very lucky. And as I said at the time, I did not realise how lucky I was. Mm-hmm. It's only subsequently that you realise what a long and arduous journey it can be, full of rejection. And that can really, you know, play into your kind of identity as well and your confidence. But obviously you do get those too along the way. It doesn't mean that once you're published that rejection stops. You can get the odd bad review, and again, lots of things that should happen or that you think will happen don't happen, but you get used to it. You know, it's part of the it's part of the job.
And you had also with Kevin, your husband, another strand of books, and I think you merged your two names to come up with the author's name, and these were thrillers under the name Casey Hale. They did great as well.
Casey Hale, yes. That was really, it was such a fun time because our daughter had just been born, and we got news from our agent that the deal had come through, that the publisher had accepted this. Kevin at the time was winding Carrie. She was that young, she was a baby. And he was winding her. And when I came in to tell him the news, I think he just kept winding her, winding her. And the poor child was there kind of going, stop. So But it happened at a time, probably the busiest time of our lives. And it was fabulous. We did 6 books. We really enjoyed it. We loved the process. We loved, you know, kind of bouncing story ideas off each other. But it intruded so much into family life because I had my career as well. I was traveling a lot. Italy is a big market for me. So I was doing a lot of traveling. And we found at one point, there was one particular point where on the same week that I had a deadline, we had a bunch of proofs coming through for a Casey Hill book. And I had proofs coming through for one of my own. We just looked at each other and said, this can't go on. So we had to step back from that a little bit. We may well take it up again, but I think for the moment we're just enjoying, you know, the family life balance at the moment.
Yeah, which is perfect. Now, you also write scripts for Hallmark. Now, for anyone who hasn't sat down to watch a Hallmark movie, explain the concept.
The concepts are quite, how shall I say? I think everybody thinks that Hallmark movies are about a woman who comes home to her small town and meets the love of her life and then she leaves the big city. But ultimately, Hallmark movies are about community. The importance of community, the importance of social connections and how, you know, not everybody can do life alone and shouldn't. Support, encouragement, nurturing. And these are things that I would, you know, feel very strongly about because I feel the same way about my own community back in Tip when I was growing up. It was very important. And having the support and having people to rely upon. But generally the movies that I've worked on with Hallmark are Christmas movies. Which adds an extra flavour of comfort and joy. And they are pure comfort movies. So I've done 4 with Hallmark. The first one was an adaptation of my novel, A Gift to Remember. They made a more Christmassy version of that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about working with Hallmark is that they do have specific rules.
Okay.
And so they wanted to do a sequel to A Gift to Remember, but of course at the end of A Gift to Remember the couple end up together. Generally speaking, in a Hallmark movie the first kiss doesn't happen until the final scene. That's very important. We can have lots of near misses, which is fine, but the kiss should only happen at the end. Now that's fine, you work with
that. I love it.
But for a sequel, the couple have ended up together, so what do you do in the sequel? You can't have them apart again. They should never be living together. And they should certainly not be cohabitating. So we came up with a scenario where the couple were living in the same building, but on 2 different floors. And there's also, like, I love a good meet cute. You know, that's the jumping off point for pretty much all of my novels, and also for the movies, that's very important. And I had also pitched an idea in, and I also love meet cutes involving animals because I think that's just so unpredictable. It's quite chaotic. So I pitched one in which a dog ran up, grabbed a hot dog or a burger of the, you know, the guy or the woman, whichever, and ran away with it. And I got sent a memo saying, no, dogs must never be off the leash. Dogs must never eat human food. And animals must never be out of control.
That's so crazy.
It was very funny. But at the end of the day, you know, they know their audience.
Yeah.
And their audience also probably would frown upon dogs running away with hot dogs. So who knows?
Fair enough. And also you worked with Reese Witherspoon. I love her, actually.
Oh, yeah.
On the movie of your book, Something from Tiffany's. She always strikes me as someone who's very hands-on, but also very down to earth. Did you get to collaborate with her?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. There was a little bit of a story behind that whole process. It's probably ties into the whole your book is optioned and, you know, it's stuck in development hell for a long time. So what happened with Something from Tiffany's, it came out in, 2010? It's a long time ago. Maybe, yeah, 2011. So it was optioned before it came out, which was brilliant. It was optioned by 20th Century Fox. So I was like, oh, fantastic. This is amazing. You know, great. Kudos. You know, you've got the bragging rights here. Whoa, fantastic. But ultimately, nothing was happening for a long, long time. And I occasionally got updates about how X, Y, and Z was reading the script, and Justin Timberlake wanted to play the lead, and all this talk, and I was like getting tired of this talk. So I went to LA one particular week, and I had a great set of meetings with Hallmark, and I agreed to meet with the Fox people. Suits, big suits, you know, Hollywood suits full of all the bravado ones. So they took me to lunch, and I asked them for an update. And they said, oh, yeah, everything's going along really, really well. And I just thought, look, lads, you're kind of, you know, you give me the brush off here. I kind of know. You know, you can tell when somebody's just trying to. So I just thought that. And at the end of the day, I treat the business very seriously and I see my IP as important. And I think it's not just a story to me. It's also the business side is also equally important. And I just thought, look, are we going to make this movie or are we not? And somehow, I don't know why, just something came into my head and I decided to give them an ultimatum. During which they needed to make the movie within 6 months or I was pulling the rights. So I walked out of the meeting feeling like, you know, real badass boss woman. I told those Hollywood suits. I rang my agent and he said, "You did what?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, I want them to make the movie. I don't want to be, it's no good to me to have it sitting on a shelf. You know, we want the movie to be made." And he basically gave me the intention that I had just torpedoed my entire career in Hollywood and I would never work in this town again. But as it turned out, six months passed and they didn't put the movie into production. And I thought, okay, I really kind of landed myself in that one. But thankfully, a few weeks later, we got a call from Reese Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine. They had heard that the project was back on, you know, back in the mix. And she asked for a call to see if I would talk about optioning it. And I was like jumping.
Yes, please.
I was jumping in the air. It was the best move possible. So it was a hell of a risk, but luckily it paid off.
It sure did, didn't it? And then you had the red carpet and everything.
Oh my gosh. It was a dream come true for, I mean, I think for most authors, you have these moments where you imagine your book and the first time you see your book in the bookshelf, great, that is a possibility, that can happen. Then you kind of imagine maybe it'll go to number one. You think, oh, that'd be great if that happened. And everybody has this secret dream, I believe, to see themselves maybe on the red carpet or a Hollywood movie, but you don't really think it might happen. So when this call came during COVID, which was very unlikely and very unexpected, to say that they were making the movie and they were literally filming in New York within the month. And did I want to come and see the movie being filmed? It was a whirlwind for me. It was incredible.
Now, your latest book, Only in New York, it could also be a great film. And you based it in New York.
Yes.
And with Hannah, you know, an Irish woman.
Yes.
And an ice hockey player called Ward.
Yes. So Hannah is an Irish born, but she's a publicist.
Yeah.
And she needs a fresh start, for reasons that we will discover in the book. So she needs a fresh start in New York, but she can't afford New York rents. So she's given the option by one of her celebrity clients to house sit in a gorgeous penthouse in a landmark building on the Upper East Side. But it comes with a bit of a snag because her celebrity client is at war with the older residents in the building who aren't very happy about an influencer, attention seeker, as they call her. Mm. So she needs to keep the peace, or she tries to keep the peace. Hannah tries to keep the peace. But the grumpy old dinosaur next door is not for turning. But Hannah thinks, well, I'll try and keep him on side. And bit by bit, they do start to communicate via notes under the door. She feels she's breaking down his defences. So she's happy about that. But in the background, she has been assigned the media, or literally the client from hell. He's a sports star. He's injured. He's cranky. He's a media nightmare. And nothing that she does to help him become more media friendly lands. And she's really at the end of her tether. And then she finds that some surprising inspiration comes from dealing with the dinosaur next door.
It's a great read. What I find really interesting is they both get a voice in the book. You know, it's not just her view of him, but we find out what he's thinking, which is great. So you wanted them both to speak, didn't you?
I did, because I feel that, you know, from Ward's point of view, he's struggling with identity. He is a tough guy, sports star, and with that comes expectations for him also to be a tough guy sports star. And he wasn't like that, or isn't like that at heart, but he can't put that across successfully as to the kind of guy he really is. And I think that's probably an issue for a lot of younger guys growing up now, is that whole issue of male identity. Where exactly, who should I be, and who, you know, what am I expected to be?
Without a doubt. Well, look, it's a great novel. And Melissa Hill, thank you very much for being my guest this morning. Only in New York is published by HQ, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. And listeners can follow you, and you've a great feed on Instagram at Melissa Hill Books. Thanks very much for being my guest this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.